We're here on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, 10 lines down. We're talking about the case of an Asufi. We found a baby that was abandoned, and we don't know if the mother abandoned the baby because she's so embarrassed about the fact that this baby is a mamzer, and therefore she doesn't care about this baby, she just wants to get it out. Or perhaps the mother is under such great pressure, she's hoping that somebody with compassion will find the baby and save the baby. Omar Meimar, Hai Perid Sufli. Rashi explains that we're talking about a case where outside the city there's some sort of a rubbish dump. That's where they dug a chafira. They throw in it all sorts of garinei tmarim, all sorts of old rubbish that's left for the animals to eat. In such a case, yesh bo mishum asufi, if the baby was found in that rubbish pile outside the city, Rashi speaks about mazikin. It's a very dangerous place. There's someone there who's going to have compassion and take the baby. The baby won't be found. It's clearly indicative of the fact that the baby is illegitimate, and that's why the mother abandoned the baby and placed it in such danger. The next case is Charifta Dinara. A Charifta Dinara is like a rowboat, some sort of raft, and they found the baby on the river inside this little boat. That's where the mother left it. That's called the Charifus Hanar, in the middle of the river. So if it's a place like in a port where there are many, many boats around, is then Ein Bo Mishum Asufi, we're not worried about an Asufi, because in such a case the mother saw to it that the baby would be found, and she took the trouble of bringing the baby in this little boat, this little raft, out into the public area. However, if the baby was found in a small boat, Pishrei, in a place towards the bottom, towards the slope of the river, that's not where the boats usually go. It's an abandoned baby that's left in a vulnerable, dangerous position. Yesh bo mishum asufi. We have to be concerned that the baby was abandoned deliberately because of its psul. It was illegitimate, it's a mamzer, and it has the din of an asufi. Tzidei Rishus HaRabim, Ein Bo Mishum Asufi. Rishus HaRabim, Yesh Bo Mishum Asufi. If the baby was left in the middle of the road, where people walk and they stomp and they step, and there are also wagons that go by, that's a very, very dangerous situation. The baby could be crushed to death. And in such a case, we assume that the baby is an asufi. If, on the other hand, the baby was left on the tzidei rishus harabim, on what we would call the sidewalk, you know, where people walk, but they don't, they don't have wagons over there, the baby's life is not in jeopardy, it's a makom ha-mishtamer, it's something that's more protective, then Ein Bo Mishum Asufi. Omar Ravu B'Shnei Ravon, if we're dealing with the situation of a famine, Ein Bo Mishum Asufi, then we could assume the reason why she left the baby abandoned, because she felt that leaving the baby at home with her would jeopardize the life of the baby. There's no food and the cupboards are empty. And she felt that maybe if the baby would be found in the public area, maybe somebody would have compassion, somebody who has a little bit of food left, and maybe save the baby's life and sustain the baby. And therefore, Ein Bo Mishum Asufi. The Gemara now tries to clarify, Hoda Rava, this statement of Rav B'Shnei Rivon, which is some sort of a qualification of a previous statement, what case are we going on? Elam, if it's on the case of Rishus HaRabim, where they found the baby left in Rishus HaRabim, means that during the time of Ra'av, of famine, According to this comment of Rabbah, there's no din asufe. The baby was left there because of the famine. Is Aidi the Shnei Ra'avon Katlale? Because of the famine which he destroyed, where the mother destroyed the baby by putting the baby in such a dangerous area where it could be crushed to death. It must be because of its psul. She doesn't care about the baby, and she wants the baby to go. She may not have the capacity to murder the baby, be a dying, but therefore it's an asufi. So it doesn't make sense that Rava would be mafkia the shame asufi in a case of Shnei Ra'avon, but she left the baby in Rosh Hashanah the Ella. But rather, let's reinterpret Rava as a qualification of a tzidei Rosh Hashanah, the case where she left the baby in a makom mishtamer on the side of the Rosh Hashanah, off the road, off the highway. Is my iria Shnei Ra'avon? Why does Rava feel compelled to qualify that statement of tzidei Rosh Hashanah ein bo mishum asufi as a case of Shnei Ra'avon? I feel below Shnei Ra'avon, even if it wasn't years of famine, the baby would still not have the din of a Sufi because she took care to leave the baby in a place that's protected. Ella, ki itmar de Rava. Rava's going on an entirely different discussion. Aha. Di Omar, Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rabbi Yehuda bar Zavdi, Omar Rav Tinok. If we have a case of a baby who was left in a place where he would normally be called an asufi, and now the parents, or at least potentially a husband and a wife, potentially who might be the parents of this baby, come to identify the baby as their own, which would be machshir the baby, is kolzman shebashuk, as long as the baby is in the public area, is aviv v'imo nemonim olav, they can testify and be believed that they are their parents, they can identify the baby as their child. But Nesaf min ashuk, once Bezdin takes the baby and it's no longer in the shuk, Ein ne'monim olav, they no longer can testify that he is their child. And the Gemara wants to clarify that this is what Rava is qualifying. My time, Rava is saying, what's the difference between before it was taken in and after it was taken in? Omar Rava says, hol v'yotzal of Shema Sufi. The Chachamim wanted to assume that once the child was already collected and the word, the kol, went out that this baby is an Asufi, was collected, at that point the Rabbanon established the psul on that scenario, Amar Rava, Ubishnei Ra'avon, Afal Pisha Nesaf Minashuk, Oviv V'imo Nemonim Olav. In the exceptional case of a famine, the parents are believed to identify this child as their own even after he was Nesaf, because in times of famine, many children, unfortunately, many babies are left abandoned because their parents have no wherewithal to support them and to maintain them as living alive. So in such a case, Chachamim did not want to passel the child, the baby, because it was much more logical to assume that maybe the baby was not Nasufi. And therefore, even though the baby was already collected out of the shuk, nevertheless, it doesn't have the status of an apostle and an asufi. And why is that? Because it's Shnei Ra'avon. That's Rava's qualification of the din of Afal Pisha Nesaf is Oviv V'imo Nemonim Olav. Om Rav Chizda Shlosha Nemonim Lialter. There are three individuals who have the authority, have the credibility to testify about this Asufi whose identity is unknown, and to establish the Asufi as a kosher. But again, all these individuals are in that unique position of credibility, only Lialter, only within a short period of time. Eluhen Asufi Chaya Upoteres Chavroseha. Asufi Hodi Amoron. We've already said that parents who come and say, this is my child, they are believed to testify that this is their child as long as he wasn't Nesaf Minashuk. And that means Miyat. So that's one din of Nemanis on the part of the father and the mother. Number two, Chaya. Chaya is a woman who, a midwife as we call it, who helps the mother, the pregnant mother, give birth. Desanya, we have a braisa, Chaya Nemanis Lomar, Nemanis Lomar, Zeyotza Rishon, Vizeyotza Sheni. If twins are born, and the question is, who has the din of a Bechor to get Pishnayim? So you have two, let's say two boys that were born. It's the Chaya, the midwife, who has the credibility to establish which one of these two babies is the Bechor, which one came out second. Bamedvar Mamurim, for how long of a period of time does the Chaya maintain her special unique status as a Chaya to be believed? That's only Shlo Yotza V'Chazra. That she has not exited from the labor room where the baby was born. Once she leaves, even though she comes back into the room, she's already forfeited her status as a Chaya. And she no longer is believed. Rabbi Lezer, he argues, and Omer, he says, Huxaka al Omda Nemenes Vimlav in Nemenes. That means as long as she is there on the place, she has like a station, is then she's believed. My Benai, what's the difference between what we saw in the Tanakhama? That she didn't leave the room where the baby was born, the labor room, as opposed to Rabbi Eliezer, which sounds identical when he says Huxkalomda Ikabenayu da Hader Apa. In other words, the Tanakhama expands the Nemanus of the Chaya, whereas Rabbi Eliezer constricts and restricts the Nemanus of a Chaya. According to Rabbi Eliezer, even if she didn't leave the birth room, nevertheless, she has forfeited her status and her credibility as a Chaya once she's no longer in her station. It means her station is the place where she stations herself to watch the birth and help with the birth. As soon as she turns away from that position, even though she's still in the labor room, she's already Ois Chaya. She loses her status as a Chaya. She's not believed to testify about the baby when he was born, whereas according to Tanakhama, as long as she has not left the room where the baby was born, even if she turns her body around, she's no longer facing the Yoledes, nevertheless, she is believed, as long as she hasn't left the room. Then we have the third category of a person who's believed, Poteres Chavroseha. Maihi, what's the case? And now the Gemara quotes the Mishnah in Nida, Daf Samach Amid Beis, and this is the din of Tliya, meaning we find a stain, a blood stain. We want to know who's the Nida. Shalosh Nashim Shayishedos V'mita Achas. Three women were in very close proximity, sleeping on a bed. V'nimtza dam tachas achas mehen, and we find dam, and we don't know where the dam came from. Was it from this woman or that woman or the third one? Kulam tmeis. We have to assume mitzad sofik that it might be any of them, and each one now is in the state of tmeya. But bodka achas mehen v'nimtzeis tmeya. If one of the three makes a bedika and she finds that she has dam, he tmeya v'kulon tahoros. Then we can assume that the dam that we found is hers, and as we attribute it to her, we know that she's a nida, and that kesem, that stain is hers. Amrav Chizda shebodka atzma kishir veses. She was bodekes atzma immediately after they found the kesem, because again, if a period of time passed by, maybe she became a nida, and that has nothing to do with the fact that this kesem may have belonged to any of the other two women in the bed. So we can only be told that the kesem on this woman who found that she has dam, if she immediately, after we found the dam, did her bdika, and therefore we assume that the dam of the kesem came from her. But if she waits more than this shear of kishir veses, which is a veses means immediacy, right after this immediacy, then it's too late. She no longer has the status of Poteres Chavrosela, and all three remain Tmeos. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa. We have a case now of four women who gave birth. Four married women gave birth in one room. One was married to a Kohen, the other was married to a Levi, the third was married to a Nusin, who's Pasul Lekol, and the fourth was married to a Mamzer, who's obviously Pasul Lekol, and we don't know which baby belongs to which wife. Is Nemenes Chaya Lomar, the Chaya, the midwife, is believed to testify Zeh Kohen, Zeh Levi, Zeh Nosin, Zeh Mamzer, to tell us and each baby, to attribute the baby to this particular woman. She's the mother of this baby, and if she's an Eishes Kohen, the baby's a Kohen, etc., etc. And this nemanus that the Chacham established to believe and trust the word of the Chaya, according to the Ran at least, is in a case where that's the only way we can clarify where the baby came from, who is the mother of the baby. So the Chachamim established that in such a case, she, the Chaya, is believed. But by Medvar Amurim, the Braisa qualifies and circumscribes the limited status of Chaya to be believed. Kishalo Kara Lashem Arar, which means that there was no one who came along and contradicted her testimony. Aval Kara Olea Arar, if somebody comes along and testifies that what she said is incorrect, let's say, for example, she, the Chaya, testifies about this particular baby, that it's the Eishes Kohen or the Eishes Levi gave birth to this baby. Now the Ma'arer comes along and he says, no, this baby was born to the Eishes Mamzer, so we now have contradictory testimony about this baby as to whether it's a kosher, a apostle, a mamzer, or a kosher. Einan Emenes, her testimony is no longer reliable because the aid that's makrish, the ma'arer, has the status of an aid of makrish, an erechet v'akrosh lav klumu, and therefore we cannot rely in such a case on the chaya. The Gemara now analyzes arar demai, who actually came along to contradict and completely topple the believability, the credibility of the male ledes. Ilema arar tchad, if it's one against her, is ha'amar Rav Yochanan ein arar pochos mishnayim, that in order to create an error, a contradiction against the testimony of one aid when that one aid was believed, you need two people to contradict the one. One against the one is not sufficient to create a hakhosh, an error on the aid. Ela aratre. So in the first lashon that we're learning now, the case in the Braisa is such that two witnesses came to contradict the word, the testimony of the Mialedes, and therefore she's not nemenis against two witnesses. The Iboy Seiman, the second lishon of the Gemara says, the Olam Emelcha Arat Chad, even if only one Yachid, one individual, comes to testify against the Mialedes, nevertheless, the Mialedes forfeits her nemonis. Aye, what do we do with Rabbi Yochanan's principle? V'chiyomer Rabbi Yochanan ein irv v'pochs mishnayim hani mili. That's only heicha de isa chazaka de kashrus. Now here, keep in mind, we find a baby. We don't know if the baby belongs to the Kohen, the Levi, right? The Eishes Kohen, the Eishes Levi, the Eishes Nasi, the Eishes Mam. We have no chazak on this baby, because from the moment it emerges into this world, it's a suffix. And therefore, in such a case, we can be matil suffix on the nemonis of the mialedis if one aid comes to be ma'arer. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan's statement, where one aid hama'ar is not believed, he's like nothing, you need two aidim to be ma'ar, that's heicha, that's a case of deleka chazaka de kashrus. I'm sorry. In Rabbi Yochanan's case is heicha de ika chazaka, where she is testifying the mialedis on. Well, not actually, in this case of mialedis, there is no chazaka de kashrus. As I said before, we have no clue what the status of this baby is in terms of yuchsin, if he's a kosher apostle, whether he's the son of a Kohen or Levi, or the son of a mamzer, we don't know. So there's no cheskes kashrus. And in such a case, according to this lishna in the Gemara, one aid could be ma'arer. Where, in what context, did Rabbi Yochanan make his statement that you need an ir of shnayim v'yein ir pachos mishnayim? That's in a case where the Eid Echad was testifying on someone who had a cheskes kashrus, and the cheskes kashrus supports the testimony of that one witness, then you need shnayim to be ma'ar. But in our case over here, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that ir of the chad is enough, because there's no cheskes kashrus. And chad nami mehemon, one aid is enough to be ma'arer against one, and in this case against the mialedes, to be docha, to undermine the trustability, the reliability of the mialedes. The Ran is bothered by a contradiction to a very famous principle that we have in Yevamos of kol makom shemina torah le'edecha reikan shnayim, that if the Torah believes and relies on the testimony of one aid, then in such a case that aid is elevated to the status of shnayim, and therefore if there's only one aid to be ma'arer, it's his word against shnayim. And the Ran establishes a new principle here, that when do we assume aid echad is nemen kishnayim? That's a dovash asid lizbarer, asid lizbarer, milsad avidu ligluya. A person will not lie if the issue ultimately will be clarified and will be able to determine whether he said truth or falsehood. But if there's no way that his word could be forced to stand the test of clarification, that's not a milsad avidu ligluya. They were afraid of sheker. And there's no absolute trustability. We don't say that one is believed like two. If you take a look here in the Tosfos Riyas Zochein, he says, Les lechazaka de kashrus. In our case of the four married women who gave birth in one place, there is no chazaka de kashrus. Shalo, no delibrius miwa kosher. Vehem adayim bekviusam. Shalo yotsu mea bias. That all the four babies are now presently in their original place, in the labor room, the birth room, and that means they're bekvius. And when they're bekvius, we have a principle called kol kavur kemechtzal mechzed domi, and therefore there's no cheskes kashrus. However, yotzu me'abayis, if they had left the house, that's called naidi, that's no longer kavua, then, says the Tosri HaZokain, we can apply the principle of kol de parish miruba parish. What I would like to raise here is a question on the Tosri HaZokin, is where's the rov over here? You have a Kohen, a Levi, you have a Nos and a Mamzer. The Nos and a Mamzer are psulim, and the Levi and the Kohen obviously are ksherim. So it looks like the way it's stashed here, it's 50-50. So even if you had a kol de parish situation, I'm not sure how you would be machria with a rov. The Gemara now continues with an analysis of the the situation where one person is in has a unique status of being Naman, even though normally, let's say, we would require two Eidim, but one person is in a unique situation where we believe and we trust him. And the Gemara now quotes the Braisa of Naman Bala Mekach, Lomar Lazeh Macharti, Lazeh Ein Macharti. If you have two people claiming that they bought the object and they paid for it, and we really have no way to clarify which one is telling the truth, is the mocher himself, the seller, is believed to testify that I sold it to Reuven rather than to Shimon, or vice versa. But Medvar Murim, when is the mocher believed? When is he put into this situation that in Dini Mominis he's believed? Normally we need two Eidim. He's believed as a single Eid. That's only Bizman Shemekho Biyado. There's a new category of Nemanis called Biyado. It means that he is holding on to the object. He hasn't given it over yet. And at that point, he has the Nemanis of Biyado. He can give it to whoever he wants. And not only that, we would add a psychological point over here that there is a pressure on the mocher to remember exactly and know exactly to whom he sold the object, because he's holding on to the object. He's got to deliver the object to its rightful owner, in this case to its rightful buyer. So he's very medayik, he's very careful to know and remember who gave him the money and who bought it from him first. Aval e mekho biyodo, once he passes on the object, takes it out of his possession, then eino neman, he's no longer biyodo, he doesn't have biyodo, and he's not careful. We cannot rely on his memory to assume that he remembers to whom he sold it. He's like out of the picture, and once he gave over the object, his responsibility applies when and only when he still hasn't delivered the object. And now we're on Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara understands that this Braisa is talking about a case where the mocher has not yet received payment. In fact, the Gemara v'nechzei zuzim iman nokat. Forget about whether or not the mekach is biyado, it's not biyado. He should be believed simply because he should know who paid him the money. Again, the Gemara at this point understands that one of the two potential buyers, but not both, shelled out the money and gave it over to the mocher. And in such a case, the mocher should be believed even if he doesn't have the mekach in his hand, because he's got to know who paid him. And he remembers who paid him. He writes it down in his book, you know, that he received money. So the Gemara answers, Lo tzricha, the case of this braisa is, din naka mitravayu. He's got money, he received money from both these mochrim, each one who's claiming he bought it first. And what's the case? V'yomer, the mocher claims, chad mi date v'chad bal karchi. One of them gave me the money and I accepted it willingly. The other shoved the money into my throat, you know, threw it onto my table, and I never received it willingly. I was forced to take it. Lo yadia. We have no witnesses. Hey mi date v'hey lo mi date. Which one of the two claimants here? None of the two claimants of the lokhim, none of the two claiming people have witnesses to support their claim. So what do we do in such a case? If the mocher testifies that Reuven gave him the money willingly and he the mocher sold it to him willingly, whereas Shimon forced it down his throat, you know, threw it in his face, then the mocher is believed. So the mocher identifies who actually bought the object mirtzono. Now the Sefer the Braisa has another case where one individual is believed, and that is a case where there was a court case between the litigant and the defendant in Beis Din. And after the verdict was handed down as to who is the rightful owner of this sum of money or this object, whatever they're arguing about, and now we don't know who is the zocher and who is the chayev? Neman adayin lomar lazeh zochisi v'lazeh chiyavti. the judge himself is believed to testify that Reuven was the one who my verdict was handed down in his favor. Shimon was the one, the verdict was handed down against him. And once again, we have a special takonis chachamim to believe the dayon. We have no other way of clarifying who is the zocher, who is mischayev. But now this halach is qualified. When is the dayan believed? It wasn't that he handed down a verdict and then the bali dinim flew the coop. And now he wants to say, well, I remember which one I was zaka. That's a scenario that doesn't give a special nemona status to the dayan. Aval ein bali dinim omdim lefanav. Eino Neman. It's only when the Bali Dinam are standing in front of him, they haven't checked out, they didn't fly the coop yet. The Gemara Din, and immediately the Dayan says, I remember, I know who was the one who was Zocher, who was Mischayev, that's fine. Then he's believed. But Ein Bali Dinam Omdim Lefanav, once they leave, he lost his Nemanus. The Gemara says, I don't understand this whole discussion here about whether Omdim Lefanav, Ein Omdim Lefanav, and you don't know how to clarify it. Should you believe the Dayan? Should you not believe the Dayan? Leave that all out. V'nechzei zchusa man nokat. After the verdict was handed down, then the document is written up in which it says that so-and-so was Zocher B'din for this and that, this amount of money or this object. Is why don't we open up this document that's being held, it's possessed, it's in the hands of one of the two, that would certainly clarify that he was the Zocher. The Gemara says, Lo tzricha de kari l'schusaya, we're talking about a case where the psak din, the document that testifies to the final verdict, was lost, was destroyed, was ripped up, and therefore we have no way of clarifying it through the psak din, through the document. The Zchusei, as the Gemara calls it, and therefore we're going to rely on the Dayan. The Gemara asks now a question, V'nehedar v'naidinu. If, indeed, there is a question here about who was Zocher B'din between Reuven and Shimon, who won and who lost, and there's no document in the hands of one of the two to testify that he was the winning, victorious litigant, in such a case, why not just retry the case and let the Dayan weigh the evidence a second time around and Paskin, and the assumption is that he'll come to the same conclusion he came to in the first round. And the Gemara answers, no, it's a case of Shuda de Dayan'i. This is a case where there's no evidence, of, you know, conclusive evidence. There's no way of actually determining based on testimony, etc., etc., who is the winning litigant, and you can't be mata the din in favor of someone, one of the two bali dinim, based on objective evidence, and then we have aloch of shuda the daini, that the dain is believed to somehow intuit who he thinks is the truthful bal din and who's telling a lie, who's fibbing over here. And if we want to redo the case, that's not a healthy thing to do, because we have to worry about the fact that now the one who may have lost the case, he's going to work on the Dayan and present himself in such a way that the Dayan will believe him. We'll never get the same psak. So in Shuda the Dayan, we don't have the option of retrying the case and re-examining the evidence. There is no conclusive evidence to be had. And in such a case, we have to know whether the Dayan could be believed to say that he was mata the din in favor of Reuven, or in favor of Shimon, whatever it might be. And that only applies as long as bali dinim omdim lefanov. Now we have the discussion about a bechor. We have two sons, and we have to clarify and determine which one is the bechor that gets pishnayim. Omer of Nachman Shloshen Emonim Ala Bechor, there are three categories of individuals that are believed, that have credibility through their testimony to establish who is going to get Pishnayim, who is the Bechor. The Eluhain, these are the three. Chaya, the woman, as we call her, the midwife, who in Hebrew we call it Mialedes, who was there at the time of the birth. Aviv, the father, the Imo, and the mother. And now, Rav Nachman distinguishes between these three. Chaya, she's believed, Lialter, only immediately after the Leda. Of course, before we had a Machlokes between Chachamim and Rabbi Lezer, exactly what that means, the Chacham say she's believed as long as she didn't, this midwife did not step out of the labor room. Rabbi Eliezer says, as long as she didn't turn the other way, that's called the altar. Markit islay. But Imo, the mother is believed, called Shiva for 7 days. That's when the baby is in her, so to speak, in her possession, and she's allowed, and she's believed to testify which is the Bukhar. The Aviv Li'olam, but the Torah grants credibility to the father to recognize his son as the Bukhar and say, this is my Bukhar Li'olam, even beyond the 7 days. And there's going to be an issue here in the Poskim, Lecha Mishnah, the Karban Sanal, about within the 7 day period after the birth, whether or not she, the mother, is believed, or the father also has credibility during that period of time. Kedisanya, we learned in a Braisa. And the Braisa builds itself on the Parsha of Pishnayim, of Bechor. In Dvarim, Perek Chaf Aleph, it says, Ki es ha-Bechor ben ha-Sniwa yakir loseis lo Pishnayim. The word yakir means that yakirenu l'acherim, the father has the credibility to establish for others who exactly, which of the brothers, the babies, is the Bechor. Mikan, on Rabbi Yehuda, Neman Adam Lomar, Zebni Bechor. A father is believed to say, this is my Bechor, I identify Bechor, he's going to get Pishnayim. Ukshem Shineman Lomar, Zebni Bechor. To the same extent he's believed in Dini Mominos, to establish who is the Bechor to get Pishnayim, Kach Neman, he's believed even as far as Yuchsin is concerned, Lomar, to testify, Ze ben Grusha, Ze ben Chalula, Chalutza, which means that the mother of this child is a Grusha, or a Chalutza, and therefore the child is considered a Chalal, and he's Pasul Yedu, he's Pasul Lakuna, based on the testimony of the father. And normally we would say the following, that in this case, where we're dealing with Yuchsin and Kashus Lakuna, we would require the testimony of two Edim. The status of a child linyan Yuchsin is considered Dover Shebeerva, in Dover Shebeerva Pachos Mishnayim. But by virtue of this Pasuk Yakir, which gives and grants by Torah law a special status in their modest to the father, we don't need two Edim, as we normally would be in a Dover Shebeerva, and the father is believed. Chachom Omrim Eino Nema. Chachom say he can't be Nema because the child has a Chezkas Kashrus Lakuna, and now we have to have clear-cut evidence, two witnesses to testify that he's not a kosher, but rather he's pasul l'kahuna. And therefore, although the Chacham agree that the father has credibility as nemonis of Yakir, that's only as far as establishing Bechor, l'inyan dinimonis for Pishnayim, but for a Dover Shebeerva, like Psuli Kuna, the father doesn't have this ability and this believability. And some of the Rishonim want to assume that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Nemonis of the father splits into two levels. In the case of Bechor, that's a Doraisa kind of Nemonis, but it's quite possible that as far as Psul Kahuna, the father's believability is only Minarabbanan, it's Xeris Chachamim. And they establish that he's believed, the father's believed. Keep in mind, by the way, that Ben Chalutz itself is only a Chol Derabbanan Mishum Xera. That's a side point here. Tosa Rush says, how could the father be believed to establish that his son is a Ben Grusha? if that be the case, he is implying, he's testifying, at least by implication, that he himself, this father, married a grusha. And we have a principle, ein adam mesim atzma rosh, a person is not believed to testify about himself that on a criminal act. And Tosfos Rosh answers, Shebashasha Nasa, he claims that he didn't know when he married her that she was a grusha. He finally, later on, discovered that she was a grusha. Tosus here, Divra Maskil Kishem, asks me, Minayin Rabbi Yehuda, how do we know that the father is believed to passel his son? The Pasuk of Yakir is in the context of Bechora, and there, the father is testifying a litovas mano on behalf to benefit the son, to allow him and grant him the rights to collect pishnayim, but who says that the Torah grants the father reliability, credibility to passel the son and work against the interest of the son? And Tosfos answers that we derive this from the din of Yakir to say that a father is believed on his katan, to say that he's a bechor. And if that be the case, then the oldest sons are mamzerim, they're psulim. He's passeling them. Because he's saying that this youngest son is the bechor. That means that the oldest sons did not come from him, from his zera. And it implies, a very strong implication, almost explicit, that the fathers believed not only on bechora as a din mamon for pishnayim, but even as far as yuchsin is concerned. If he's testifying on this youngest son that he is the bechor, then willy-nilly, by implication, he's telling us that the older children, the oldest sons, are mamzerim. So it means that he's believed as far as an individual who's assumed to be his son, to say he's not a son, but he's a mamzer. And that too is implicit in the nemunas of Yakir. The impression you get from Tosfos is not the way I said it before, that this nemunas of Yakir and Psul is a gzeirat rabbanon, but rather it's a daraisa, and it's implicit in the word Yakir, which the Torah recognizes and establishes the credibility of the father. The Mishnah tells us, Avashol Hayakore Lishtuki Beduke, which means that if a baby is born to a Pnuya and we don't know who the father of the baby is, Beduke, we have to check out the Yichus of this baby. So the Gemara asks, my Beduke? What does that mean, Beduki? What kind of Bedika are you going to have to do to investigate and determine the Yichus of the child? Ilema Bodkimis Imo, if you're going to talk about investigating the mother and asking her who was the Boel, who's the father of this child, the Omeris, and she responds, Lekoshe Nevalti, I had Be'ilo with a Kosher, Nemenis, and according to Abishol, she's believed, and we rely on her testimony. Is Kiman, we have a Mishnah in Ksubis that records Emach Lokis Tanoin between Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer on the one hand, Rabbi Yeshua on the other hand. This is in Ksubis Yud Gimel. And the question is now, what about Abishol, who relies on the testimony of the mother to identify the father as a kosher, and therefore to be machshir the Vlad? Kiman, Avishol, who does he aligning himself with in the machlokes? And the answer is, l'chora ki Rav Gamliel. Rav Gamliel is the one who says that she's believed, this now we learned in a Mishnah in Ksubis, in the case of an unwed, pregnant girl, Haisamu Beres, and we don't know who the Boel was, the Amru La, and they turned to her, Mativa Shaluberzu, what can you tell us about this baby that you gave birth to? Is he kosher apostle? It depends on who you had relations with. Amru Lahem, she responds, Mish Ploni, I had relations with so-and-so, the Kohen who, again the word Kohen here, means that he's kosher lakuna, Rashi says. It doesn't mean that she's establishing the baby as a Kohen. For that, you'd need full testimony. But she's nemenes not to establish the kohen, but to establish the baby as kosher l'kohol. And that's Rabbi Gamliel for Rabbi Eliezer Omrim nemenes. And now we're saying that Abba Shol seems to reflect the shita of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Lomi Pionu Chaim, she does not have credibility to establish that she had Be'ilu the kosher and the baby is a kosher, but rather she's Bechezkas Muberes L'Nosin L'Mamzer until she brings objective testimony to prove her claim. We assume that such a woman who had this relationship out of wedlock, she's a Pnuya, that she had beer with anyone. She lived a free life, and the Boel was probably a apostle. He was a Nosin or a Mamzer. In other words, since we know from that Mishnah, which records Machlokas Tanon, that the final bottom line in Halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, so when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi authored and edited the Mishnayos here in Masechta Kiddushin, Why did he have to tell us about Abba Shol, who's just simply agreeing with Rabbi Gamliel based on the Sugi Ksuvis? The premise is that we paskin like Rabbi Gamliel. Why do you have to tell me about Abba Shol, who's just reiterating the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel that she's believed? And the Gemara answers that Rebbe wanted to repeat this halacha twice because it's not exactly the same. Chada, in the first case of Rabbi Gamliel, where Rebbe establishes that we believe her claim, the mother's claim, that's lahakshir, but that's only a namonis that she has on herself to testify that she's allowed to marry a kohen or to eat truma, if you will, because she doesn't become a chalola. If she had be'ilu with apostle, she becomes a chalola and she's mufka, she's excluded from truma. But as far as the Vlad is concerned, is Eino Nemenes. She doesn't have the trustability to establish the kashrus of the Vlad, such that the Vlad could marry a Kohen, because as far as the Vlad is concerned, the Uber is born without any chazaka. In other words, this Pnuya was born with a chazaka, she has a chazaka, and therefore Ukma Gavra Chazkas, in a case of Sufik, will continue the Chazaka. So she's believed when she said L'kosha Livalti. But as far as the Vlad, who doesn't have a Chazaka, never had one to begin with, she's not believed. And the Sufik continues. The Chada now, Rebbe, establishes a second Mishnah in the name of Abba Shol with regard to a Shtuki called a Bduki, Lahakshir Bibita, that now we rely on the testimony of the mother, not only vis-a-vis herself, but even vis-a-vis the Vlad. That's what Abba Shol is adding here, that we didn't have in Rabbi Gamliel, that Har Nemanus, the mother, extends to the Bas as well, and removes any Suffolk Halolus, and permits this girl, who's born, to marry a Kohen. So the Gemara says, Hanich, that works out according to one Mandiomer there in Masechta Ksuvis. Le Mandiomer le Divrei Hamachshir Ba Posel Bebita, that Rabbi Gamliel's Nemonis, that he recognizes the mother to be believed, that's only for herself but not on the child. Now Rebbe has to bring the opinion here in Kiddushin of Abba Shol that went a step further and she's believed even if, as far as the child is concerned. Le Mandiomer le Divrei Hamachshir Ba Machshir Bibita, that Rabbi Gamliel, according to one interpretation, one opinion there in Ksubis was Matir, even the Vlad, meaning that the mother has Nemonis that extends to include even the Vlad, is again, we come back to Akash, Abba Shol Mayosel Hashminin, what is Abba Shol adding to Rabbi Gamliel? We pass on like Rabbi Gamliel in Ksubis. And the answer is, says the Gemara, Abba Shol Adifa Miram Gamliel, Abba Shol is taking it one step further than Rabbi Gamliel. Deimi Hasam. If we only had Rabbi Gamliel in Ksuvas Havamin, I would have said Hasam. There, Rabbi Gamliel relies on an emanus. Why derov ksherim etzla? If you have a pregnant woman, a pnuya, and she's out of wedlock, she's never been married, then most of the Bo'olim are Ksherim. We don't assume that the majority of the Bo'olim, or the potential Bo'olim, the candidates, are Psulim or Mamzerim. Aval Hecha, but in a situation of Ro Psulim Etzla, for example, let's say most of the people in that particular city are Psulim, let's say the Goyim, which would pass a little lacuna with Bias Akum, or there's the famous case of an Arusa, and the entire world, with the exception of one person, would passel her. And when they checked her out, she said that she became pregnant from the Arus, and therefore the Uber is kosher. Or in a case like we mentioned before, most of the city members are psulim, but she testifies against the Rov that she had Bia with a kosher, a member of the Mesarlet minority. In that case, I need Rav Shol, Emel Lo. I would have thought that her nemonis doesn't go that far. She's only believed to support the Rov, or when she's supported by the Rov, but not to contradict the Rov. Is Tzricha, therefore Rebbe establishes here in the name of Avishol that she's believed even against a Rov. Amar Rav, and Rav says, Halach Avishol. And Elchinami, we're going to accept even this extension of Avishol. The Mishnah says, the new Mishnah, on the bottom of Ayin Dal Amud Aleph, establishes a kol ha'asurim lavakol, all the psulim that we mentioned earlier, like a mamzer and a shtuki, is mutarim lavo zebaze. They can marry each other because a mamzer is not part of the kol, a shtuki is not part of the kol, and a kosher is not allowed to marry someone who's outside the kol, but two individuals that are married that are outside the kol can marry one the other. Rabbi Yehuda Oseh, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he's machmir, and the Gemara is going to clarify exactly why. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, vadon bivadon, those who are like hamams or nosen, who are known without any suffix, with absolute certainty that they are psulim muta, they can marry one another. But vadon bisfekon, if you have a mams or nosen who's also b'toras vadai, and wants to marry a shtuki or an asufi whose iser is only that of a safek, or sfeikon bivadon, or shtuki asuki wants to marry a mamzer and nosin, sfeikon bisfeikon, a shtuki wants to marry a shtukis, and they're both safek, or an asufi wants to marry an asufis, also could be one's a kashan, one's a pasul, so we can't allow such a marriage. The Elohein hasfeikos. And what are the cases of Sfeikos? Shtuki, Vasufi, we cannot identify the father. So therefore we don't know what the status of the child is. Those are Sufik Mamzerim. And then we have Kusi, which is a group of converts, but we don't rely on their conversion. The Kusim came from the Shamronim, that originated in an area called Kusa. They were brought to Shomron at the time of Sancheriv, who exiled the Jewish people, and there, in the place called Shomron, that's where they were afraid of the dangers that lurked there, and they decided, you know, the way that they can somehow avert these problems and save themselves is by conversion. So the conversion was not accepted. And therefore, they also have a din of a suffek, as the Gemara is going to deal with later on in Daf Ayin Vav. But now the Gemara wants to deal with the machlok shin, the Tanakam, and Rabbi Yehuda. You remember that Rabbi Yehuda was machmir. My kol asurim lavo b'kol. What does it mean, according to the Chacham, the Tanakam, that those who are excluded from the kol are prohibited to marry? Jewish girls are allowed to marry each other. Elam, if we're talking about a case, Mamzere Unesine, these are Psulim Vadoim, and Shtuki Vasufi Psulim Mitzad Sofek, and they're allowed to marry each other, Hatani Le Resha. If you go back to the Mishnah that we had at Daf Samach Tes, it says, Mamzere Unesine Shtuki Vasufi Mitarim Lova Zebezet. So what was the need here for the Tana to review what he's already established in the Mishnah Liel? Besu, and furthermore, if we're going to say, assume that the intention of the Tanakama here is to be matter, all the Asurim, whether or not they're Vadoim, or they're not Sofek, Vadoim in the cases of Mamzer Nesina, Sfekis in the case of Shtuki Vasufi, is Rabbi Yehuda Oser Ahaya. On what case is Rabbi Yehuda being machmir and telling us that the psulim are not allowed to marry each other? If it's a case of avadi wants to marry a safek hamidiktani sefer, Rabbi Eliezer omer vadon vadon mut vadon besfekin sfekin sfekin asur. So that opinion that you can't mix avadi with a safek is attributed to Rabbi Eliezer by the Mishnah. Michlal implying to Rabbi Yehuda lo svir le, Rabbi Yehuda didn't accept this, because if you don't assume that, then Rabbi Eliezer is just simply reiterating what Rabbi Yehuda said. So we find here Rabbi Yehuda sort of like the excluded middle, because we have two opinions on one basic issue with the admixture, the permissibility of a vaday marrying a suffix, suffix marrying a vaday. The Chachamim Tanakama said kol hasurim love of a kol mutarim zebazeh, which probably means that the Torah's psul in the case of shtuki vasufi is a vaday, is a Torah's vaday, they can marry each other. Or do we say no? That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. No, we cannot allow a vadai to marry a suffik, because a vadai is a vadai and a suffik is a suffik. It's not that shtuki asufi take on the status of adon. So where does Rabbi Yehuda fit in? Oh, v'chitem, if you'll tell me, Rabbi Yehuda oser ager b'mamzeres. Rabbi Yehuda is talking about a different case. He's talking about the possibility of a ger marrying a mamzeres, meaning that he wants to suggest that kahal gerim nikra kahal, which again we saw back on Dafayin Beis, and therefore, if we recognize the kahal gerim as kahal, they're not allowed, a ger is not allowed to marry a mamzeres, and the Tanakama is matir. If that be the case, then it's difficult. Midi ger v'mamzeres ketoni, you know, where is the indication, the hint in the Mishnah that we're talking about an issue of ger and mamzeres? The Tanakam opens the Mishnah by saying kol asurim love of a kol ketani. So we're talking about psule kol. Ger is not a apostle of kol, so there's no hint here that we're talking about gerim here. So Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda really is arguing on the heter of ger b'mamzeres. And we have to reinterpret the Chacham and the Tanakam in such a way that when the Tanakam said kol asurim, love of a kol, he wasn't referring to psule kol at all, but rather to psule kohuna. And now we're turning to daf ayin dalid amid beis v'hachi kama. This is what the Tanakam was saying. Kol asurim, love of a kahal kohuna. We have to clarify and add an adjective here, that kahal here is not talking about psule kahal, but rather kahal kahuna, umay niyu, and what would be a case of psule kahuna that are not included in psule kahal? We're talking about a giores, we're talking about a ger, because in the case of a ger, there is no psul of bia bakal, there's a psul kahuna, and specifically, giores p'chusa mibash shalashan v'yom echad. The Rabbanon assume, and this is a sugya later on in Asar Yuchsin, that any Gioris is psula lakuna, even though she's less than 3 years old when she undergoes Gerus. She wasn't Re'uya Labia. Udelok Rav Shim ben Yochai, not like the Rashbi, who's of the opinion that a Gioris p'chusa migimel shanim is allowed to marry a Kohen, and the Tanakama is adding, with regard to psuli kuna, which means yores p'chusa v'bashal shanim, that since she's muteris love of a kol, is mutarim love of zebazeh, she's allowed to marry psuli kol like a mamzeres unesina. So again, the Gemara is going back to try to establish the machlokes in Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, is addressing the case of ger and mamzeres. Do we consider kahal gerim kahal? And here's where Rabbi Yehuda is the machmir, and he elevates the kahal gerim to the status of a kahal. And the Tanakam, on the other hand, is going to be matir ger b'mamzeres, because ger is outside of the kahal. And of course, we ask the question, where is this going on? I mean, in the Mishnah, we're not talking about a ger. We're talking about the kol asurim lava b'kol. That can't be referring to a ger. And the answer is, says the Gemara, that the word kol has to be interpreted as referring to kahal kahuna. And kahal kahuna means that giores is indeed a psul. And if that be the case, we're talking about a giores who's psul lakuna. What was the opinion of the Tanakamia to allow a giores to marry a kohen? It's going to be a case of a giores p'chusa mibas sholoshanim, and delo kirav Shimon ben Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai is matir giores p'chusa mibas sholoshanim to marry into kohuna, but the Tanakama extends the psul kahuna of a gioris to the case of chusim vashalosh, and now the Tanakam of our Mishnah is adding. He's adding to the previous Mishnah that psule kahuna, which includes even a gioris chusim vashaloshon, like the Chachom of Rashbi, mutarim lavo bezebazeh, she is allowed to marry psule kol. So there is an indication here that we're talking about a giores who's permitted to marry a mamzer. And on that case, Rabbi Yehuda is machmir, and he says, no, even though this giores is asura lekuhuna, but nevertheless, she still remains included in the kahal, and she's not allowed to marry psule kol like a mamzer or a nosin. So the Tanakam is saying that once she's psule kuhuna, in this case of Gioras Pusim Basholosh, then she's allowed to marry a mamzer. Why? Because she's considered outside of kahal. And on that, Rabbi Yehuda is machman. He says, no, she's still included in the kahal. Now the Gemara wants to know, why did you interpret the words of the Tanakama of Kol Asurim Lovo Bekal as Kal Kahuna, and he has in mind here the case of a Gioras Pchusim Basholosh against Rav Shimon bar Yochai Nukma? Why not assume that we're talking about a Bas Sholoshanim V'Yom Echad? So the Gerus took place after she was already Re'uya Labiyah. V'afilu Rav Shimon bar Yochai, such that the Tanakama could be reconciled, reflecting Rav Shimon, that a Gioras is only, whose Asura Lakuna is only if the Gerus took place after Sholoshanim V'Yom Echad, but Pchusu Sholoshanim Uteres Lakoin. And on that Gioras, she's Asura Lovo Bekal Kahuna, she's Muteres Linose Lipsul Kol, she's allowed to marry a Mamzer, because kahal gerim eino kahal. So Gemara says, in Cain, if you can interpret that the Tanakama is talking about a case of a giores who converted after the age of three, reflecting the shita of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, is mitzida tavra. I have an answer that's here ready for you. In other words, from the meticulous reading of the words, we can clarify that we're talking about a giores pchusim bashol shonim that's asur lamamzer elataima debas shol shonim v'yom echad. That the reason why nizgaira less than shol shonim kechad, therefore she's allowed to marry, allowed to marry psulim. Psule Kol, she's included in Psule Kahuna because the gerus took place after she was Shalom Yom Echad. Ha, Pchusim Vashalom Yom Echad, Muteres Lovo Bakal Kahuna, is then Asura Lovo Zebazer. It's not logical to assume that in this case where she had gerus Pchusim Vashalom Yom Echad, which means she's allowed to marry a kohen according to Reb Shimon, she should become Asura Lovo Zebazeh. I mean, that's the language of the Mishnah, Asura Lovo Zebazeh, that she can't marry an apostle. Hare Prusim Bashal Shom Yechler Rab Shim Bar Yochai Muteris Lava Bakal Kuna Umutaros Lava Zebezeh. In other words, the reason why a Bashal Shonim is allowed to marry Psulim is because Kahal Gerim Loikri Kol. So for that very reason, we should be Matir, even a Giores who is Prusim Bashal Shonim, to allow her to marry Psule Kol, because Kahal Gerim Eina. So we have to really assume, therefore, that the Tanakhava does not agree to Rav Shimon, but rather every Gioris is Asura B'Kuhuna, whether or not the Gioris took place after she was three or less than she was three. And therefore, the Tanakhama makes this statement that Kol Asurim Lava B'Kal Kuhuna Mutarim Lava B'Psule Kol, because Kal Gerim Ene Kol. So the Gemara now asks, Klolahu. Klolahu, the chol asurim lovo bekalkunu mutarim lovo zebaze, vare almona ugrusha chalola vizona dasurim lovo bekalkunu vasurim lovo zebaze. So you see that even those who are excluded from kahuna are still mutarim bekal. Now, we don't say that a posel lakuna is posel lakal, v'su, and furthermore, hamutar, are you telling me, the principle you're formulating is that if they are psule kuna, lo huchuli nasil mamzer psule kuna, that psule kuna and only psule kuna allowed to marry a mamzer, is Han Mutter, somebody whose Mutter Bekal Kuhuna, you're telling me, therefore, is also B'Mamzeres, Vare Gersh and Mutter B'Kohenes, Mutter B'Mamzeres. And this Sugi Rabosai, we're going to try to analyze in Yirtz Hashem in the next Shir, which we'll pick up again tomorrow, B'Ezer Hashem. So let's stop here.